Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. Joining me here via phone, I welcome Ryan Hagedorn of Edmentum. He is the Chief Operating Officer at Edmentum, an education technology company providing web-based learning programs and solutions to more than a million children in 40,000 schools in every state in the nation. He joins us here today to talk about online learning in our nation's classrooms and expanding role it's playing in career technical education. Many high schools throughout the country are breaking traditional boundaries, offering classes in cybersecurity, hospitality, and tourism, business, and finance. They are able to do this through online technology programs developed by companies like Edmentum. Brian, welcome to 411 Teen.
Dr. Hollifield, it's great to be here, and thank you for having me.
Yes. Look forward to getting all the latest on CTEs and technology in the schools. When we think about high school, we always think of college degrees and then professional degrees. And career training or career technical education has kind of taken a back seat. What has been the impetus, from your perspective, for one to now pursue career technical education?
It's a great question, and I think in so many ways, CTE, or career and technical education, is experiencing a bit of a renaissance. Certainly isn't a new concept. It's been one that has been around for a long time. It's taken on many different names. But I think the renaissance that we're experiencing now is really born out of the fact that we're looking to individualize learning for all students in every way that we can. And I think what we're realizing more and more is that students need multiple paths to, career, to earn a living wage, to provide for themselves and their families in the future, and that not all of those paths have to run through post-secondary, although many still do. I think what we're seeing now is that we really want to prepare students for what's next, and for many students that will be post-secondary endeavors, but for some students that will mean going directly into the workforce and providing career readiness and the requisite academic as well as technical skills that are necessary to be past the pre-qualifications and eligibility for employment are necessary to provide students earlier and earlier. And I think that's what you're seeing now across many states and even nationally across the federal landscape.
Mm-hmm. What exactly, for the listening audience, would you just define what career technical education is?
Sure. I think, from my standpoint, career and technical education provides students both the academic as well as the technical skills that provides the foundational knowledge and training necessary to be eligible for employment in a particular field, industry, or even occupation. It's really about creating that foundational academic learning as well as real-world application to make sure that they are ready to succeed in their desired field.
So really what I hear you saying is that those who go into career technical education, those who take courses in that area, when they finish in that manner, when they finish, they really can walk out into the job world. They have the skills, they have the training that's necessary for them to at least start in an entry-level job in cyberspace or whatever it may be, or cybersecurity or architect, because that's what I'm hearing. I don't know if I have the correct idea, but that's what I'm hearing. That's why I'm asking you.
Absolutely. I think that's the ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. I think the more that we can do to provide learners and students of all ages the ability to matriculate from a given program and be mm-hmm. ready to go directly into the workforce and have those prerequisite skills and knowledge is absolutely the goal. And there is different, you know, certification bodies and other credentials that are mm-hmm. out there that can signify that they have met those requirements. I think the other aspect of it, depending on the field, and there's many, many fields, you know, which we can concentrate from a CTE standpoint, sometimes there tends to be an application period, right? And so mm-hmm. you look at some industries or occupations require things like apprenticeships as part of their, you know, path to employment. And I think the idea is at least if we can get folks ready to enter into an apprenticeship at a bare minimum, hopefully enter into a situation where they can be fully employed and earning a living wage, that is absolutely the ultimate goal.
Well, when thinking about the pathways beyond high school, we always think of two tracks, that whole college degree and the professional training. And I see CTE would be that professional training track. Correct? Is that right?
That's correct. I think you break it down into basic college and career readiness, and this will certainly, CTE falls in the career readiness side.
Let me ask you, Ryan, what impact does the skills gap play on this whole change, this whole movement?
It's a really interesting question because certainly I think the skill gap and the challenges that we're facing both in Florida and nationally in terms of finding folks with the requisite skills to fill certain positions is driving a lot of the interest right now in CTE. I know mm-hmm. there's a lot of legislative activity around it and different funding sources that are being brought into play to try to help address the fact that we have jobs that are going unfilled. Mm-hmm. And so I think that creates a tailwind, so to speak, for CTE. I think the challenge that we're going to have and where we really start to see the impact of this is, you know, CTE is one of those rare disciplines where it's both academic and technical at the same time. And mm-hmm. so it creates a dependency amongst those in education, those in industry and labor to really work together to help identify what are the skill gaps within really, you know, hyper-local areas, so certain communities, you know, what are the skill gaps currently of industry in Tallahassee, and really mm-hmm. then modifying curriculum in the surrounding areas, the places that are going to be the feeder system for those jobs, and making sure that we modify the curriculum and the instruction to support the skills that need to be covered as part of the local industry that is operating within that given area. And, you know, mm-hmm. that can vary widely from county to county, state to state. And so we need to think about that skill gap and really hyper-localize the content and the curriculum on the CTE standpoint to make sure that we're really addressing the need of the workforce and the labor demand mm-hmm. within that specific area.
Yeah, so you're tailoring, you know, what is necessary, what is needed in that specific geographical area, which may be different from another area, but that would be how you would address it or handle it, right? You would tailor the needs in that area, whether it's agriculture or it's, you know, computers or whatever the case may be, right? Am I?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I think that's the key to making sure that skill gap is adequately addressed.
How does career technical education differ from vocational education? So often when I look at the various areas or the various courses that are available through career technical education, there's some of the old, what we called when I was in school, voc education courses. You know, mm-hmm. so how does it differ? Does it just encompass more, which really seems to be the case? It just seems to have expanded. I mean, because, yes, you have, you know, automotives, you have shop, construction, but you also have cybersecurity and architecture. So, again, I guess I'm asking you, look compare or contrast career technical education and vocational education, and they may indeed be the same thing, just a little bit more sophisticated.
Yeah, I think in so many ways that's correct. I think really CT represents the evolution of vocational training in traditional vo-tech. You know, you made the point earlier where we were at one point it was either or. You know, you either went to college or you went to vo-tech. And now it's much more of a Venn diagram. You can do things within the CTE programs that augment, enhance, sort of operate as prerequisites for some of the work that you're going to do in post-secondary. You also have the opportunity to look at certifications in lieu of going into post-secondary. So, you know, there was a point in time where I think vo-tech was really for those individuals that weren't going to be able to get into post-secondary and they were trying to learn a basic skill or trade. You mentioned manufacturing, construction, things of that nature. I think CTE in so many ways just is a more sophisticated and evolved view of that, where we certainly have some of those basic skills that are still looking to be met. But we also have the opportunity to do things like cybersecurity and some of these other in-demand fields where you can become Microsoft certified in a CTE program and go immediately, you know, be immediately employed as an IT consultant within an organization and without ever needing to go through any sort of post-secondary training. And so there's this almost now three parallel paths that I think CTE represents, that kind of bridge between traditional vo-tech and post-secondary.
Okay. Ed Menem is an online educational technology company. What role do you play in this whole developing CTE at all the partner schools? I know you have several partner schools.
We do. And Edmentum is actually a combination of three different organizations, Plato Learning, Archipelago Learning, and Educational Options. And we really got our start as Plato Learning back in the 1960s as a research grant out of the University of Illinois Urbana. In so many ways, very interesting and pertinent to our discussion today, because it was about creating online learning opportunities for those that were, you know, for instance, soldiers coming back from the war who needed to get some basic skills training to become employable and earn a living wage.
We're going to take a brief break. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I am talking with Ryan Hagedorn.
I was mentioning Edmentum got its start as Plato Learning in the 1960s, really rooted in what today would be known as CTE, which was around creating online learning opportunities for those that had matriculated out of secondary, I mentioned soldiers coming home from the war that were looking to enhance their skill sets to become employable. And so our history is deeply rooted in creating unique learning opportunities for those that are trying to better themselves both academically and beyond. And the work that we do today has certainly evolved from the work that we did in the 1960s, but in a lot of ways it's still about helping every student reach their full potential. And from that, we work in combination with school districts all across the country, 90% of the school districts in Florida. And really what we do is create curriculum that is uniquely tailored to the respective needs of their students that they're dealing with and they're building on that specific day. And we do everything, you know, from our core curriculum all the way up to career and technical ed and everything in between. But that's really the bulk of the work that we do, is how do we help bring these learning opportunities to students who are looking for an opportunity to either, you know, matriculate onto post-secondary work or become employable through career readiness endeavors, or simply just you know, complete their secondary work mm-hmm. and graduate and move on to whatever is next for them.
Well, I'm glad that you added just a little history with Adminum, because it's been around 60 years just about then. So you come with a wealth of knowledge is what I'm thinking, as far as talking about online learning and CTE. So that's impressive in itself.
Well, thank you. Yes, we're very proud of the work that we've done and the history that we have, especially as it pertains to helping students reach their potential and really helping teachers and educators across the country reach their students in a really unique way. Because for us, at the end of the day, it is still the teacher and the student connection is still the most powerful thing mm-hmm. we believe in education.
Okay. Define online learning for the listening audience. Exactly what does that mean? Because when I think of online learning, I think of learning using the computer or some other devices, internet or whatever. So would you define online learning? This is an education program you're teaching us today.
Sure, happy to. I love it. I love talking about this. I think, you know, my definition of online learning is consistent with yours. I think today, as you mentioned, in this day and age, learning can occur anywhere, on any device, in almost any location. I mean, it certainly has evolved from where online learning began, which was certainly at a desktop, plugged into a network, and, you know, you were getting some sort of instruction or some sort of curriculum over a computer digitally versus getting it in its most traditional sense, which is print-based and textbooks and things of that nature mm-hmm. and sitting in a classroom. I think really for me, the only difference in online learning is that now, in this day and age, the portability of learning and being able to learn from anywhere at any time mm-hmm. is what really creates some unique opportunities for students. And the curriculum is simply digital, and now, of course, hosted in the cloud, as opposed to what we think of in our traditional learning, which is in a classroom with a textbook and a teacher standing in front of it, delivering mm-hmm. A lecture.
So there are various online learning sites. How does one select an online learning site? I mean, what are the variables? What are the conditions? What should they look for to determine a good one versus a not so good one? You know, what are the variables? What do they need to consider in choosing an online learning site?
Yeah, I think obviously the most important thing is you begin with the end in mind, and certainly mm-hmm. what you're trying to accomplish can, in a lot of ways, really narrow the field in terms of what you're looking for. So if you are interested in taking, college courses online, you know, obviously that's going to narrow your field to post-secondary institutions offering that type of curriculum. Of course, you can all the way go down to what my kids do online right now, which is practice, you know, some of their early literacy endeavors through phonics and other things, because they are of that age. And obviously, you know, there's a whole spectrum in between of what I've just described, I think. Mm-hmm. But assuming you've kind of narrowed that part of it down and you know what you're looking to get out of your online learning experience, you want to look for rigor, which is another way of saying quality. You want the academics to be, robust and credentialed. So if there's any accreditations or other mm-hmm. third-party validations that are relevant, I certainly would look for those. And then, of course, it has to be aligned. And then what I mean by aligned is it has to be, you know, if it's something that you're taking in a secondary environment for credit, you certainly want that to be aligned to the state standards of the state in which you live. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that combination of alignment and rigor are really the keys to weeding those out. And you'll pretty quickly see, as you evaluate different providers, who has it and who doesn't. But I would say those two things are the most important pieces when evaluating where you might seek some online learning opportunities.
Okay. Now, in looking at CTEs and online learning, we're finding that high schools are rapidly increasing their offerings. How does this serve the district's needs? Is it beneficial? Does it have any influence on graduation rates? Talk to us about that, please.
Yeah, I think some of this is a little bit of a philosophical discussion on what does success look like. Mm-hmm. I think for Edmentum and for myself, we really believe that there is no such thing anymore as a one-size-fits-all approach to education, and that every child really does need something different. And I think what districts are now looking at in terms of creating really what multiple pathways to completion. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. You no longer are in a position where you have to take your four core plus your electives plus your foreign language, and that's what success looks like. You have to, you know, maybe achieve a certain GPA and pass an exit exam or some end of course exams, and that was success for every student across Florida, as an example. And the reality, I think we all know, is all, you know, we have such diverse student populations this day and age with such varying interests and different backgrounds and resources available to them that there's no way that success can be measured the same across all those students. They're all going to go on to do different things, and this should really be about measuring success on a continuum, right? From where that student starts to where ultimately they end up, which is having a healthy and happy, productive life, providing for themselves and their family. And what districts are really doing now, in my opinion, is recognizing that and saying, okay, now we're going to have three or four different pathways to graduation or pathways to completion, and being able to say, this isn't one size fits all anymore. Students identify with which one of these three to four tracks that they most believe is aligned to their own interest, and this is what you're going to be evaluated against. And will that help improve graduation rates? Will that help improve completion rates?
I hope so.
Yeah. I think this is all about, you know, engaging students in what is interesting and relevant to them, and if we do that, we should see better outcomes.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think also when it's geared and tailored to the student and the student interests, that in itself ensures that the whole process will be much more successful.
Absolutely. I think this is a great thing for our educational system. You know, we've, in so many ways, we've gone back to the 1950s and now are recognizing we need to prepare students for what's next. Mm-hmm. And that's going to mean different things to each student. And that's a pretty significant shift from where we've been over the last 50 to 75 years, which was success is graduating from college.
Exactly.
Or graduating from high school and getting enrolled in post-secondary. That is success.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time believing that makes sense for every student.
Well, you know, basically what's happened is, you know, we have said, you know, that you have to go to college. Everybody, you know, we went through this. Everybody's got to go to college. Everybody's got to go to college. Now we're saying something different. What has fueled this change in attitude from college, you know, to us understanding that there are some other options? College is not the answer for everyone. Just like I would say CTE and online learning is not the answer for everyone. It depends on the individual.
That's right.
Yeah.
I agree with you completely. It absolutely depends on each individual's situation, circumstances, and
learning style.
Objectives.
Learning style, independence. I mean, you know, time management, all of those play a role in how successful one will be in one course versus another direction. And then you have the hybrid courses, what I call the hybrid courses, which are online courses, and they're kind of a blend of the traditional and the online. And these courses allow the instructors to incorporate new types of learning milieus.
Yeah, I think that, and those, quite honestly, in our opinion, are some of the most effective models that we've seen. Mm-hmm. It's really, you know, how do you allow students to work where they're most comfortable, which, to your point earlier, drives that engagement higher and keeps them interested in their coursework, then also how do you make sure that the interactions that they have with their teacher are even more meaningful and impactful? In the few minutes or hours that they get with them, they can really be more productive in those conversations. And I think that's where the work that we do comes in, and that's what we really try to focus on, is the technology itself isn't going to help students learn any more effectively. But what the technology can do in terms of providing insights to the teacher is going to make those conversations, make those interactions, make that coaching so much more relevant to that student. And the student's in an environment where they're comfortable and they're engaged in the curriculum. The combination of those three things is going to produce better outcomes.
That's it. That's the key to success, because you are, again, tapping into the individual. They have options that will support their learning styles and their interest and their attention level and all of that. So I think in this, you get some of everything. So it has to be beneficial. There's some other benefits that are often cited. What about the cost? What about the cost of online learning?
Well, I mean, I think the cost, certainly cost to me is just a component of the overall equity and accessibility aspect of online learning, right? You now have the ability to bring at usually what is a fairly reasonable cost, you have the ability to bring world-class teachers, world-class curriculum and instruction to students who, given all the other circumstances or options available, wouldn't have those types of resources.
Indeed.
Where they live, in their district, et cetera. And so the cost to me is really more about the opportunity cost of not doing anything and continuing to create a bigger divide in equity and access to quality education across this country. And really, online learning closes that gap. And yes, it can be more, there are others, economical benefits to it, but to me, that's the overriding force of why it can be so impactful.
Oh, well, and I agree with you on that. And when I meant cost, I was thinking of those students who don't really even have the cost of having to commute to a physical campus, that they can do it in their library or at their home, and that indeed may be beneficial for them. It just depends again on the student.
I agree with you, and I think about too, especially when it comes to CTE and some of the students that are enrolled in those courses. You look at the, maybe they have the ability now to put in another hour at their job because they don't have to commute across town to get to campus to take a course. So not only is the cost of the access to the education much less, and they're saving on transportation, to your point, but they're also now earning more, too, because they have more flexibility and they can learn in a number of different ways. And so it's incredibly beneficial from that standpoint as it pertains to online learning.
Well, it's like you anticipated my next question, because I wanted to say that if you look at online learning, in many ways, depending on the student, it can be better. It can be more effective for some, whether they're working, whether they are not working, working, not working, family, class size, environment. I mean, everything can be, depending on the student, more beneficial. So is there a difference between online learning and e-learning, or are they the same? Will you make that distinction, please?
I think they're, I think at this point in time they are kind of merging together. I think e-learning at one point meant it wasn't necessarily accessible over the web, but you had things like e-books and other digital tools that you created and made available to students. With where we've gone in the way that the cloud now pretty much controls everything, in the way that we access things across the web, I think they're pretty much becoming synonymous with one another.
Okay. What role, can the whole public-private partnership play in this you know, technical, career technical education and online learning. I know that they kind of work hand in hand shaping the education for tomorrow's workforce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head. I think, as I mentioned kind of earlier in our chat, as a nation and as states have changed legislation and put more funding behind this, and districts have created more opportunities for these types of pathways, that is all fantastic, and I think that's all great progress. But as we talked about earlier when we were mentioning the skill gap, where we've got to get to is the private sector, industry, things of that nature have got to inform the curriculum. We've got to, you know, have conversations with large healthcare providers and say, okay, mm-hmm. you're having a hard time getting certified nursing assistants. What makes, in your opinion, who's successful? What skills do they have? What qualities do they have? How do we help build curriculum that mm-hmm. creates, classes and generations of learners that are coming to you with these prerequisites already identified? We can look across, you know, into the industry and see what we believe they need, and we can look at things like the 16 national career clusters that have been sort of standardized, so that we can look within, you know, the healthcare cluster and see that these are the prerequisites and certifications and skills that are necessary. And I think that's a good start, but I think when, you know, the Indian River Hospital tells us exactly what they're looking for in nursing assistants, and we're able to put that into the curriculum that helps them come out of that with appropriate certifications, not just to be a nursing assistant, but be successful in Indian River Hospital.
We need to take a brief break, and I'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
I'm talking with Ryan Hagedorn. He is the CEO of Edmentum.
Just to kind of put a bow on that point, the curriculum needs to be informed by industry and local industry and local private sector. We can look at the reports all day. We can see what the open jobs are, and we can align those to the curriculum that's needed for preparing students for those careers. But once we all sit down at the table and start having conversations about what really is necessary, I think this is when we take these programs to the next level. So that's the partnership that I'd like to see between public and private, is mm-hmm. have industry inform the curriculum, not just tell us that there's a skill gap and we need to do something about it.
Well, when I told folks I was going to be talking about online learning, of course, a lot of people had 1,000 questions that they wanted me to share with you. So I want to make sure I cover these questions, because I think they're common questions that are raised when one is in or on online learning. First of all, if one receives an online learning degree, is it valid? These are questions that folks have asked me to pursue with you. Are they valid? You know, is an online degree worth it? Those are the kinds of things they wanted to have me ask you to talk about. Because they're, you know, when you get out there in the real world, folks wonder, if I got my degree online, is it taken as seriously compared to if I had gone the traditional learning? So that's what I'm asking you.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think I'll answer that in two ways. Obviously,
okay.
The work that we do at Edmentum is primarily focused on K through 12,
mm-hmm.
and specifically
mm-hmm.
for your question in the secondary realm. So obviously, post-secondary, higher ed, they offer their another universe of online learning and degree opportunities, and I won't even get in. I'll let others address that part of it. I think from the work that we do, It's absolutely valid. So we have a online school. It's called Ed Options Academy. And the reason that it's valid is it's a fully accredited virtual private school. So we are accredited by Advanced Ed, which is the same accrediting body that accredits a lot of schools throughout the country. And so the credentials are no different than anything else that you would get. And, mm-hmm. you know, not in addition to the accreditation, that also is recognized by the military and other institutions that allow students to matriculate in once they've earned their degree.
Next question. And I'm just going down this list because folks have given me, oh, you're going to talk about this. Please find this out for me.
Sure.
So that's why I'm doing it like this. How effective have you found this online learning again to be? Okay. Another was the benefits of e-learning. I mean, is it? Because I think when you say online learning, and again, folks are, they don't know, and especially different generations wonder just about, again, the validity of it. As far as the coursework, students don't have the opportunity to interact with the instructor or the teacher. And I know that a lot of this is not true. I know we have virtual school here, and students, I've done a program on it, say that they have more opportunities to interact. So I'd like to hear from you, who's the CEO of Edmentum, exactly where you see that.
No, I think you're exactly right. I think, you know, just like with anything, there are those that provide services with a high degree of integrity and, mm-hmm. and quality, and unfortunately there are some that don't. On online learning, I think, is no different, and we've seen some of that in the news, and that tends to grab the headlines, and that tends to become the narrative. But the reality is there's a lot of online learning that's happening today that is, in my opinion, even more effective than some of the traditional methods that have been utilized in the past. And I'll speak again to our virtual school, mm-hmm. where we do have teachers interacting with students, students interacting with other students, and we're able to use technology and, you know, video chat and all these things that you would expect that technology allows us to do in terms of facilitating communication to create that. And our teachers are all state certified. They're all high quality. They're all experienced in teaching courses online. So really what students are getting is a more tailored experience, mm-hmm. not necessarily one that is any less rigorous or subpar to what they would traditionally get. It's about meeting the students where they are, not forcing them to fit our mold.
But it's different. And whenever something is different, it takes some time to adjust to it. You don't always have to go physically to a brick and mortar school. You know, you can turn on the computer. And I think that requires some adjustment of the parents and other powers that be. Would you agree?
It absolutely, not only does it, you know, require adjustment,
mm-hmm.
but I think it also requires accountability of all the stakeholders in
yeah.
an individual's learning journey, right?
I mean, touché, so good point.
Online learning will never diminish the need for accountability of everyone in that student's learning, and when mm-hmm. that goes to the teacher, the parent, et cetera. In some ways, it's heightened through online learning. But if that scaffolding and support is in place, it can be just as effective, if not more.
Oh, I appreciate you saying that, because one of the comments I had from a parent was that this online learning was just a way for teachers to do less. So I didn't even have to prompt you and ask you that question, because I think you addressed it, and I appreciate it. But that is an attitude that's out there. And I think that we need to debunk some of these misconceptions about online learning, because it needs to be, you're talking about from K to 12, so parents are going to be actively involved in their students' course selection. And if they feel that a certain platform is invalid or is not meeting the needs, it's going to be harder to sell the product, I think.
Absolutely. I agree. And I think that's bringing the parent into that process in so many ways, online learning allows you to do. And I think that's one of the things that folks miss a lot of the time. You know, I think about probably both of our educational experiences. Mm-hmm. There was no way for our parents to know what we were learning unless they went and sat down and had a conversation with the teacher.
Right. Yeah.
Through the technology and what, you know, platforms like ours, I can allow the student, the parents to log directly into their child's coursework, mm-hmm. see what they're learning, experience the curriculum just like they are, see, you know, how they've done, send them reports on how their student's progressing, what their work looks like. The opportunity to engage parents in the learning process is exponentially higher today, and by utilizing things like educational technology, that I think we need to take be more aggressive in taking advantage of that, because when you have that engagement from the teacher and the parent, students generally are successful. And now we have a way to facilitate that in ways we haven't previously.
Well, you know, with CTE, I think, as I was thinking about when you were talking, I think it kind of reflects our conflicted feelings also about blue-collar jobs and workers. Well, you know, we venerate the idea of hard work, yet we assume that someone who's sitting behind a desk making a six-figure salary is stellar. And I think that's another one of the problems that's encountered when people don't have a full understanding of online learning and CTE. Comments?
I agree with you. I think that's an unfortunate byproduct of the emphasis that we put on 100% focus on post-secondary enrollment. And as a result of that, some you know, unfortunately, folks that are going to come out of high school and let's say become a welder or a pipe fitter, you know, hard work and work worth doing for sure, because it makes our infrastructure and our communities better. But we set them back by saying this isn't, you know, as good as going to college or anything like that. Or maybe they try to go to college and spend 2 years realizing they don't like it, only to go back and get their certification and apprenticeship in welding. And the reality is we should get them ready to start the day one after they finish their high school degree. And they should be ready to move right into that workforce. And that's really the power of CTE. Is there's no like you mentioned, sitting behind a desk and ordering a six, you know, let's use that example, sitting behind a desk and making a six-figure income. You know what? If the student coming out and making $80,000 as a welder right out of college, or excuse me, right out of high school, in 5 years is going to be in a great place compared to that person who's just now finishing their college degree, if there are, you know, if they know that welding is what they want to do for their career. So why are we not helping them get to it faster?
Exactly.
That's what I think we got to do.
Well, why do you think we're seeing this increase then in the schools? I mean, that's good. So have they been drinking the Kool-Aid and they realize that, oh, we need to make some adjustments now? Because I think we are seeing it very slowly. In the schools. Now, we don't see a lot of it here in Tallahassee, but I think as far as CTE is concerned and online learning, it's growing. And I'm wondering what you are contributing this growth to. Why are we seeing it increasing in the schools?
Well, I think there's a big difference between the growth that we're seeing and then, of course, the effectiveness of that growth.
That's true.
My take on it is you're seeing growth primarily driven from the increase in legislation that's taken place. You know, I was reading an article the other day. We had 82 different pieces of legislation that went through different state legislators around some sort of career and technical education. That was double what it was the year before. And so I think there's obviously that people, you know, and that's primarily driven by skill gap, right? That's legislators looking at their respective communities and saying, how are we going to help fill these open jobs? What has to take place now is the instruction and the initiatives of the districts have to catch up to the legislation, as is often the case. And right now, districts are really trying to figure out, how do I still do my core four and, you know, my core academic subjects, English, ELA, math, science, social studies, et cetera, and also provide career and technical ed. And it's a process, right? It's kind of you're reimagining and relearning a lot of things, and you're having to change everything from not just your curriculum or your teachers, but your schedules. And a lot of that, as you know, takes coordination with post-secondary, because maybe they have some of the machines and other things necessary in terms of infrastructure to administer career and tech ed programs. So it's a massive amount of coordination. I love that districts are, the interest is increasing, the funding is increasing. We've got to go in, and this is a lot of work that we do here at Edmentum, is we need to go in and help them understand how to bring all this together programmatically so that students can get a clear understanding of what options are available to them, how to access those resources, and how to make that meaningful in their overall educational journey.
Yeah, and that's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got a big job to do. You do. In these last few minutes, got about 4 minutes left. I want to ask you to address virtual reality and artificial intelligence. Can you make a distinction? I know it's fascinating. I understand you have an online class that enables young folks to visit artworks for 4 different artworks and museums. For example, they can go to the Metropolitan in New York, or they can go to the National Gallery in D.C., or go to the Art Institute in Chicago. So would you talk about that, augmented reality and virtual reality, and distinguish those, and tell us how this works?
Sure. So a quick delineation between the two. Virtual reality is obviously when you are completely immersing yourself in an alternate reality, right? It is an entirely virtual reality that you've created outside of where you currently are, and that's most commonly associated when you see folks wearing the headsets and the goggles. They are in a virtual environment. Augmented reality is probably the most well-named because it is exactly that. You're augmenting the current reality that you're in. And so that is where you see the ability to use devices like your phone or iPad and create and to augment the reality in with other things. You know, Pokemon Go is a great example of that, the game that was a craze for so long, and quite honestly may still be. But so those are the two different things. They come, you know, virtual reality is where you are really getting kind of a full experience, but there's also, you know, it takes folks a little bit to get used to that. Augmented reality is much more accessible because everyone has a device of some kind usually, and it's a little bit easier to acclimate yourself to that environment. But how we use it at Edmentum and why we infuse it into our curriculum goes back to an issue we talked about earlier, which is it's all about equity and access. It's all about the ability to bring experiences to students that normally wouldn't have it. And we believe that, you know, quote-unquote hands-on immersive experience is one of the most effective modalities in which to learn. And so if students in Polk County never were going to make it up to the Met, to your point, or take a field trip like that, well, why don't we bring the museum to them? And why should they not be able to experience it, but some other student can, who has the, you know, who's from outside, you know, Long Island, and can take the train down? That's not equity. And so it's really about how do we bring that experience to those students wherever they are, so they feel like they've had the same opportunities to learn in the same way that every student gets.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are just about out of time. Any closing words of wisdom you'd like to share in 30 seconds?
Well, I love that people are, you know, I love talking about online learning. I love talking about what we can do for students. And I love, you know, I understand there's misconceptions out there. The thing I always say is, for the first time ever, we're able to give students a different experience than what we had and our parents had and their parents had, which is the ability for them to learn where they want, when they want, and how they want. And I don't know anything else for the parents out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything else we could ask for our children, because education is still the most powerful gift that we can give anyone. And the way that students can learn today through online learning and educational technology, I think is an incredible opportunity.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate your expertise. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. The 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.